Who are you?
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, presented by Zata Jewelers. KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
32 men enter, but only one can be named champion. These men have faces for radio, but do they have the chin to take a punch?
You want me to hit you?
That's right.
What, like in the face?
Surprise me.
This is so stupid.
Anyone can give a hot take. Everyone has an opinion, but can they fight?
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
It's time for the Killer Bees Fight Club. Let's get ready to...
Okay, that's Michael Buffer's lawyers. I'm not going to say the line, Michael Buffer lawyers. I'm not going to say the line. You're so strong.
Good work by Michael Carroll. Good work by Brian McDonald and their help putting this together. It's the first annual Killer Bees Fight Club bracket where we've taken 32 of the very best, there's full 32, we had to reach for a few, of the Houston sports radio personalities in this city. We broke them down into four regions. The Charlie Polillo region, the Ralph Cooper region, the Rich Lord region, and the Kenny Hand region. We're going to do a few of these a day, just kind of depends on how it's spaced out. We're going to ultimately play down to a champion. A champion on Championship Monday. Let's go for the next few weeks. This is the first time we've taken a look at the bracket at Jeremy Branham. Go find the bracket there. You can also vote for the matchups. We have three matchups coming up today. We're going to space it out over a little bit of time. We'll talk about today's matchups. And Blankers and I are going to be forced to argue for one side. When it's us in a fight, we'll argue for ourselves. If it's not us in a fight, then Brian's going to tell us which side we have to argue for. But first, have you guys taken a look at the bracket? Who is in your final four, and who do you ultimately think will be the champion of the first annual Killer Bee Fight Club bracket, Blankers?
I looked it over. I was interested when you said it was a blind draw.
It was a blind draw, no seeds.
But there's still some saucy matchups. To me, I'm looking from the standpoint of experience and girth. I mean, there's a lot of weight on the table and a lot of size where it matters.
Weight classes.
This turned into a Nugenics commercial.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
Oh my god.
I'm gonna say that my final four would probably be Seth Payne,
okay,
Booker T, the Baytown Baddie, and my sleeper is Brian LaLima.
Oh,
yeah, that's a very good final four. I definitely share three of yours. I also have Seth Payne, Booker T, and the Baytown Baddie. I was torn. I've been told LaLima is quite the athlete. I think he could do it. But I'm going to stick with our station. I'm going to put Glenn Davis as my fourth member of the final four.
Is he going to stay elusive and scamper around?
Well, that's the thing. I got to ask the question. Are we assuming in this fight they are as they are right now, or can we assume health?
No,
because
right
Glenn
now.
Obviously a little that's bit
true.
Hobbled.
He's injured.
He's
right
a little
now.
Bit hobbled.
Right now.
Right now?
Oh, is
okay.
It?
All right. Well, I'll change it to LaLima. Never mind.
Whatever you
sorry,
Glenn.
Glenn's got no shot.
Sorry, Glenn.
Whenever you play these
soccer matters,
games,
but you're going to get your butt kicked.
You don't get the luxury of being at your best. You got to play the
no,
games
that's fair.
Currently
that's
are.
Fair.
What's Glenn's injury? I was not aware.
Major knee surgery.
Yeah, knee surgery. Yeah.
Oh, so
yeah,
he's
I mentioned
a one-legged man.
Yeah, he's a one-legged man in a literal butt-kicking contest.
Yeah, I mentioned it to you, I think, a week or so ago. He was doing a Dynamo game. And he does it part of the time sitting, part of the team standing in the press box with a chair. And it got exciting, and you know how Glenn gets into it. So he stood up, and then someone moved the chair, and he didn't realize it. And he fell on his keister during play-by-play and never missed a beat, looked at the monitor, and waited till a stoppage in the action before he could get back up upright. But that's what he's faced with these days in terms of no mobility.
How did he hurt his knee doing that? I thought he was an athlete.
No, he had already hurt his knee.
Oh.
What Joel described was post-knee injury.
Yeah.
I got you. I'm going to go with Clint Sterner in the Charlie Polillo region. The Baytown Baddie comes through the Polillo region. Booker T, five-time world champion. He's going to win the loaded. It's a loaded Ralph Cooper region. Blankers and I both reside in the Cooper region. That's why it's loaded. Glenn Davis I had winning the Rich Lord region. Didn't know he was hobbled, but I'm going to stick with my pick. He's a one-legged man, and he's going to win this butt kicking contest. And then I have Seth Payne going to the Kenny Hand region. And then ultimately, my champion is a guy with championship pedigree. Booker T. I got Booker T winning the first annual Killer Bee Fight Club bracket. Who do you got, Blankers and Brian?
I'm right there with you. I mean, right. He's going to be the six-time champion.
Yeah, make it unanimous. I'm going with the five-time champ, Booker T.
He becomes the six-time champion.
Yep,
he's going to win this
champ.
Thing going away. I don't care how athletic you are or what you think of anybody in this bracket. I don't see anybody upsetting the obvious favorite.
No, he's going to kick our ass, and then he's going to do the spinneroony afterwards. He's
I can outdrive him on the golf course, but I'm not going to beat him in a fight. Of course, we're not the ones picking the winners here, though. We're not picking the winners. This is going to be down to the hive. It's going to be every day on Twitter, every weekday. Not doing this on the weekends. You crazy? I don't work on the weekends. So the first matchup, we're going to have three that we argue right here. The first matchup of the day in the first annual Killer Bees Fight Club bracket is Patrick Creighton versus Adam Clanton. Brian, ooh, who's arguing for who?
All right, you better get this part right.
Okay, Joel is arguing for Patrick Creighton.
Thank you.
And Jeremy will be arguing for Adam Clanton. Joel, why don't you go ahead and make your argument for Patrick Creighton?
I just think that you got the toughness of the East Coast in New York in Patrick Creighton. You've got a guy that, you know, proclaimed to be a hell of an athlete growing up. He's short. He's stocky.
I love that you said proclaimed.
He's like a fire plug. He's like a fire hydrant. He's just short and stocky. You can't move him.
He played hockey
he's
growing up.
He's got the weight advantage. Okay, he's got that too if he said so. and I just believe that he's also going to probably make whoever he fights deaf by the middle of the first round. He's going to be screaming and yelling at them. And so they're probably not even going to be able to hear if there's any kind of refereeing or anything going on. And once he turns the tables and puts the girth on him, I think Patrick Creighton's got the advantage.
Whenever you have to ramble and reach as much as Blankers just did for Patrick Creighton, he's telling you himself that he does not have much confidence in this matchup. Somebody on Twitter already said that Clant wears affliction shirts. Doesn't he win by default? That's a great point. He's younger. He's in better shape. He's tougher. Clanton by a mile. All right, Brian, what do you think is the boxing judge of this group?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm going to have to say it's going to be a 10-8 fight for Adam Clanton. I hear Joel's side. Like, certainly Patrick's tough. He's a scrapper. But I think his scrapping days,
his
hockey days.
If he gets him on the ground?
Yeah, well, he might not then get back up. You know, that could also be a problem. I'm going to go with the youth of Adam Clanton, and he's a little bit of an honorary fellow too. And I love Adam Clanton. We worked together at the flagship way back. Mm. But yeah, I'm going to have to go with Adam Clanton this one. 10-8 on the scorecard.
This is up for vote right now. Jeremy Branham, you the listener, deciding who advances. We're just making the case. The next matchup, we're doing three today. The second matchup in the Palillo region, winner of Clanton Creighton will fight the winner of Joe George and Figgy Fig. Brian, who's all right, arguing for who here?
Blank, you will be arguing for Joe.
Thank
and
you.
Jeremy will be arguing for Figgy Fig.
All right.
I mean, when we start talking about
–
yeah, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Jeremy.
When you have the riz and the drip of Figgy Fig, you're gonna win the fight the moment you step in the ring. You look good. You feel good, you play good, and that's what Figgy Fig's going to do. Plus, he's a scrapper. He's from Ohio. Joe's a little soft in the middle. Figgy Fig takes this no problem.
So, to use your own logic on you, if you have to use your argument for as being the red carpet walk-in and what they might be wearing
during
the fight.
Part of his argument was Riz.
I've heard that he's a nice guy. I've never met him. Everybody says he's a great guy. Nice guys finish last. When you're talking about Joe George, if you talk about Patrick Creighton, and it's not just the fire plug, now you got the whole truck. Now you got the whole Chicago fire truck, short, stocky, wears the neck brace. He's going to come in and he's going to be all over the place. Kind of a linebacker football mentality that he self-proclaimed when he told us he played football when he was younger. I just think that nice guys finish last. Joe George is going to take care and whoop his ass.
I'm going to have to go 10-9 for in favor of Joe George on this one. It's for part of the reason Jeremy mentioned. I mean, Figgy Fig is the nicest guy in the city. I've worked with these guys a lot. I've seen Joe flip the switch and get into rage mode far quicker than Figgy Fig. In fact, I don't think I've ever seen Figgy Fig mad. So for that reason alone, I think Joe's got the fury and he's going to take this one. 10-9.
All right. Last matchup of the day. The third matchup in the Palillo region, Killer Bees Fight Club bracket. We got a matchup of Del Olole versus the Baytown baddie, Clint Sterner. Brian.
All right, Jeremy, you will be arguing for Clint Sterner, and Joel, you will be arguing for Dell.
I just think Clint Sterner is a big man. I just think that.
Well, you're arguing for
Dell. I know I am. Okay. That's what I'm doing because I don't know that Dell's got a chance. I mean, Dell doesn't like people. He doesn't like fighting. He doesn't like anything. He's not going to like this. He's not going to want to fight Clint Sterner. I don't think that he's going to be aggressive. I don't think that he's going to want to try and take down another guy. And because it's a very tall mountain to climb for Dell, I don't know. I'm going to have to.
You're not making a lot of points in favor of Dell.
I'm going to tell Dell to get other representation. I don't think I can represent my client.
A frog will get wings before I lose a fight to Dell Olole. And then that frog with wings will leap over the carcass of Dell after the Baytown baddie gets done with Dell. I played on the biggest stages in the NFL and college football. Might have fumbled a time or two, but I was diving for that loose ball. I was in the scrum diving for that ball that I coughed up. No contest. I'll wipe the floor with Dell.
Yeah, you beat me to the fumble joke, unfortunately, so that's a credit to Jeremy. Yeah, this is.
And I drink a lot of milk.
It's a mismatch.
Yeah, it's at least a 10-8 round in favor of Sterner. The Baytown Betty is going to easily advance. I know Dale's been watching a lot of Shogun recently in FX, so maybe he's picked up some ancient fighting techniques. But, yeah, Clint Sterner's a big guy. He's a former professional athlete. It's going to be Clint Sterner in an easy fight.
Yep. There you go. There's the first three matchups of the Palillo region. We'll be doing this each and every workday, playing down to a champion on Championship Monday. See how the voters play it out. We have it up for vote right now at Jeremy Branham, one of the three. Next round of voting will come up at 4:30, and then the final round of voting will come up at 5. You want the early return on the first matchup?
Sure.
Or should we wait? Okay. Clanton versus Creighton. So far, Clanton is leading the fight 57-43. We
That's
think that result's going to hold
thought.
Up and see Clanton advance to the Sweet 16. It is closer than I thought, too. That
it's
is closer
plug.
Than I thought. I think Creighton might be stuffing the ballots.
Joel's patting himself on the back over
yeah,
here.
Yeah, Creighton's
well, I mean, it's losing, I think
the only,
so Patter, you continue
the only
to pat
problem is
on the
that
back
Creighton
the
is spending more time worried about our signal, and he doesn't work here anymore, than he is about winning the fight.
Yeah, hopefully he doesn't think about that while he's in the ring with Clanton. All right, that's getting started. We're underway in the first annual Killer Bee Fight Club bracket. 713-780-ESPN. Was Joe Mixon overpaid? It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, before we go to the break, a word for Doc Linville. He's the best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure. He does a ton of stuff, absolutely outstanding. He does spot treatments, and they do Botox, and they do plastic surgery. But what they really do that can make a difference for you is they do the NeoGraft procedure. How do I know? Because I had the procedure done. What is it? It's getting your hair back. When I met with Doc Linville, the first thing that he told me that really was an eye-opener is that the hair on the sides and the back of your head, you're never going to lose. No matter how bald you may go in other areas, you're always going to have that hair. So he takes some of it and puts it where you need it most. Maybe your forehead has become an 8-head, and you need it in front. Maybe you got a baboon's butt on the back of your head, and it's shining, and you don't like it, you put a hat on it. You don't have to anymore because the NeoGraft procedure is a game changer, and you get hair for the rest of your life. It's absolutely fantastic, and because you listen to us and you're interested in what he does, all you got to do is go to 975hair.com and sign up for an appointment and a consultation to talk to Doc and his staff about the NeoGraft procedure. No signing on the dotted line, no money out of pocket, just you and Doc and his staff talking about how this procedure could be a game changer for you. It was for me. It was painless. I loved it. I mean, the fact that I saw the results instantly, but I saw the true results in 6 to 9 months, and I've just bragged about him ever since. Check him out today. Go in and make an appointment and just see if it's right for you, too. Go to 975hair.com.
The Killer Bees are on the loose at Carbot Brewing Company.
Oh, no, not the bees! Not the bees! Ah! I love my eyes!
Now back to the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Boys are at Carbot. Having a good old time. Coming this spring to the Carbot campus. Pizza and pints. A new slice of heaven open in the spring at the brewery. Our new pizzeria offers ice cold beer and deliciously crafted pizza made with love. Follow us on social at Carbot Pizza to get the latest news and information on the grand opening. Great place to have some food. Great place, of course, to have a drink. Carbot Brewing. If you're driving around town looking for a spot, Go there now, anytime this weekend. Go there as well, anytime this spring. Go to Carbox. 713-780-ESPN. So, came across this from the 33rd team, Marcus Mosier. Said the biggest overpays of the 2024 season. At the very top of the list, Joe Mixon, the new Houston Texans running back. Is it fair to call Joe Mixon, who is at the top of this list, over Gabe Davis, 3 years, $39 million, Calvin Ridley, 4 years, $92 million, Devin Singletary, former Texan, 3 years, $16.5 million, and Leonard Williams, 3 years, $64.5 million. Is it fair to call Mixon the biggest overpay of the 24 offseason?
I don't think by just total dollar value that it's fair. I think by position group, if you're just going like that, and where they are in their career, you and I have talked about this. I am a firm believer they should not have done anything with Joe Mixon until they saw what was going to be in his final year in, on this current contract. I don't think they had to do the three-year deal. I don't think they should have done the three-year deal. I don't think that the average of $9 million a year is the right value for him for the next three, 4 years in that kind of a deal. I really love the addition for this upcoming season, not you being Mac, but I think that if you're looking at it from in the perspective of the wide scheme of every contract that was signed this offseason in the NFL, there were bigger contracts, more money, longer years, where I raised an eyebrow and went, geez, I'm not sure what you're going to get there. But from the perspective of just from the running back position, to pay him that average AAV, where he is in his years in the league and what you don't know about how much he's got left, it was fair to have him for 1 year. Adding the extension on and the extra three, I think it was a gross overpay they didn't have to do.
Yeah, I wouldn't have him first. I think that needs to go to Calvin Ridley.
I agree
you
with that.
Can't give a receiver going into his age 30 season $92 million, 50 guaranteed, especially when he gets to the press conference and basically admits that he doesn't even want to be there. So Calvin Ridley needs to be first in this list. But I think Joe Mixon definitely is an overpay. I mean, at $9 million AAV, you're paying him more than DeAndre Swift. You're paying him more than Tony Pollard, who are much younger. I think Joe Mixon will help the team. I know we've had disagreements on how much, but I do think he helps the team. But there was no reason, in my opinion, to extend him. Training a seventh for him, getting him here, and paying him basically, $6-7 million for this season was perfect. He's going to be 28 when the season starts. He'll be 29 when the next season starts. I'm not paying a running back. I don't even really want to pay him for an age 28 season. I certainly don't want to pay him for an age 29 season. So, I thought the extension was pointless and not money well spent.
Yeah, I think that Mixon on this list is fine. I think you could argue one and two. I wouldn't put Calvin Ridley up there. And I'm not even a Calvin Ridley guy. I think he's overrated. But Tennessee has a quarterback on a rookie deal, and they're surrounding him with talent. Like, go for it. Like, that's fine. Like, let's see what you got whenever you have talent around you, and then it helps you make a decision on what kind of quarterback you have. So I'm willing to overspend because you have a rookie quarterback contract. It's why I defended the Christian Kirk contract whenever the Jags signed him for Trevor Lawrence, and then he was really good. The one that I have the biggest issue with, just looking at it from an outsider point of view, is Gabe Davis. Gabe Davis, incredibly inconsistent, and then he's going to be, can arguably be your best receiver, depending on what you think of Christian Kirk. Like, so Gabe Davis making a lot, Christian Kirk making a lot. Neither one of them's like that great. They're both solid, but not great. Gabe Davis is very inconsistent. Joe Mixon getting the 3 years at his age, getting the $9 million. You didn't have to do it. I think it's fair to have Joe Mixon as one or two as the biggest overpay of the 24 season.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think we're all on the same page that they shouldn't have done that. I think that Gabe Davis being expected to be a wide receiver one is the biggest swing and miss of all, regardless of what you're paying him. But I'm with BMAC. I thought Ridley, because what we saw when we were talking about it during last year, Jeremy, you and I were going back and forth watching, going, well, is it Lawrence or is it Ridley? Is he running his routes right? Is he the timing off? Is he selling out his quarterback when he's not getting the ball? Is he pouting? And then, like you guys said, even at the press conference, you're like, I don't know if this guy really even loves the game that much. And then
doesn't want to be in Tennessee.
You make that kind of commitment financially and from the term of the deal. I'm like, I don't know what the hell they were doing, but I think it's throwing money.
I told you what they were doing. They were putting talent around the quarterback to try to get an idea.
You couldn't find better than that.
That they have who? Like, Calvin Ridley was pretty clearly the number one receiver after you had Mike Evans come off the board and he re-signed his deal.
Mike Williams wasn't available yet.
No, he wasn't available yet.
Is Mike Williams better than Calvin Ridley coming off a torn ACL?
Well, that's the only thing I don't know. I think Mike Williams would give you more effort.
You could have traded for Keenan Allen, obviously.
Yeah, that cost you.
No, but Jeremy's talking about just guys that were on the market.
Calvin Ridley was the top free agent once free agency opened. At the receiver,
I don't know how and why.
I think that says more about the free agency class than it does about Calvin Ridley, because you certainly could have opted to spend a first round pick or one of your early picks on a wide receiver as compared to the decision to give Calvin Ridley all that money.
I mean, I've talked poorly about Calvin Ridley. Like, I'm in a weird spot here because I'm defending Calvin Ridley. Calvin Ridley does, like, as he puts up numbers. Like, Calvin Ridley produces. Does he have some moments where he drops the football? Yeah, he does. Did it in a critical spot against the Houston Texans. But we're acting like Calvin Ridley didn't go over 1,000 yards last year. We're acting like Calvin Ridley, before he was a gambler,
he's overpaid.
Didn't go over 1,300 yards. Like, the guy's caught punches of touchdowns.
Okay, what year was the 1,300 yards, though? That's got to be a long time ago at this
point. That's a long time ago at this point.
Okay,
well, then go with last year. 76, 10, he went over 1,000 for 8 touchdowns. Like, we're acting like the guy's a bum.
It's a 17 game schedule. I mean, when you're talking about 1,000 yards, you're really only talking about what, 62, 63 yards per game? It just doesn't mean as much. He never really was an impact player this year. There was too many inconsistencies, too many games where he completely disappeared. But I get the idea of you need to surround Will Levis, a young quarterback, with weapons. I just don't think Calvin Ridley is the type of weapon that's going to bring the best out of Will Levis, and at that cost, definitely not worth it.
I think it's a fair point, but the counter question is then who? Like, they were going to spend money to bring in a target for Will Levis, and they spent at the top of the market. Like, they found the best guy. And how many guys you think went over 1,000 yards last year? Like, you're acting like it's dime a dozen. How many you think did it?
I don't know.
What would you guess?
It sounds like
I would
guess
in the entire league,
14 maybe.
Well, that's way less than what it really was. But it's kind of weird, though, because you guessed 14, but you acted like getting 1,000 yards was a piece of cake.
I'm not saying it's a piece of cake. I'm just saying, like, as we keep increasing the schedule, that number becomes less and less significant.
Right, but you diminished the 1,000-yard season, but then you just said 14 guys did it. Like, that's pretty good. 28 guys did it, which
Say 21.
Oh, 28. I mean, I'm looking at Calvin Ridley's game. I'm looking at Calvin Ridley's game log right now. He had 4 games with over 100 yards this season out of 17. And like, obviously,
he's also tied
yards
for 8th with touchdown catches. Like, the guy's not a bum. I think that he's overrated.
I'm not saying he's a bum, but there's a different level to being not a bum to being worth $92 million.
Right. But we're talking about overpaid contracts, and like, I'm willing
to
overpay
if
you have a rookie
million.
QB, though. Like, and I think that's where the difference lies. Is like, hey, you got a rookie quarterback on a rookie scale. Hey, overpay for a receiver to try to help out that rookie quarterback.
I just believe that you could find a guy. Maybe, like you said, it doesn't have to be at the very top of the market, and you might have been able to get a guy that could be as productive, just because of the fact that he was the number one name on the list. I have just true question marks about the character of a guy. I'm just talking about on the field, about how much he really wants to play football and how much he really wants to kind of hone in on his craft. And the overpay to me is just the length of the deal at the amount of money.
Sure. This texture says you can argue Michael Pittman was a younger and better option over Ridley. I would agree with that. 100%. He was franchise tagged by the Colts.
He was never really on the market. Yeah.
Yeah, Evans was never on the market. Pittman was never on the market. Ridley was the top free agent receiver on the market, and that's why he got paid what he got. Like, would I have paid him that? No. If I have a fringe rookie quarterback, would I pay him? Yeah, it's worth a shot.
Let's ask this.
Davis contract is worse, and I would say the Joe Mixon contract's worse.
I'll ask you guys this, though. Do you think that someone else was going to give him that contract, if not Tennessee? Because I got a hard time believing there was another team out there that was going to throw that kind of money at him.
No, they won the bidding. Jacksonville was
involved.
What
was their bidding?
New England was involved. Yeah, there was multiple teams that were reported
at that level
in Calvin Ridley.
I'm curious how big they won the bidding.
I think there definitely was bidding, because when we heard from Calvin Ridley in his press conference, he basically, without saying it, said it like, I wanted to go back in Jacksonville, but, yay, they offered me so much money, I couldn't tell them no.
I think there were other teams that were making him offers. I don't think anybody was offering the kind of money that he got from Tennessee.
We probably won't get the exact details of those other offers. I think he just got forced to the decision where it was so much money that he couldn't walk away from it, even though it wasn't a situation that he necessarily wanted to put himself in.
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Bad Take Boulevard, who makes the list this week with the worst takes of the week? It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Time to welcome some new takes.
Right this way.
To Bad Take Boulevard.
If only there was something in your head to control the things you say.
It's the dumbest argument ever.
With the Killer Bees.
Can I just say that I'm an idiot for listening to you?
He's Blank. I am Branham. We are the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. It's time now for the worst takes of the week. A little segment called Bad Take Boulevard. Who has made the list this week? First and foremost, Blankers, we had that caller on earlier this week. Mark,
yes,
said Danelle Hunter is just a guy. Had 16 and a half sacks last year, career high. That's better than being just a guy.
Well, he went so far as to make two calls and double down on the fact that the Texans as a franchise, no one wants to play here. They can't land a big name, and they can't take care of their own and keep the ones they want to keep. I mean, he was just all over the map with bad takes.
Yeah, I don't think that he likes Casario a whole lot.
I'm eager to hear this. I was out Monday, so I didn't get to hear it yet.
It was a double banger.
Yeah.
You and I had him on Thursday or Friday, I think.
Oh, okay. We have the audio. Yeah. That's right. Here was caller Mark with this take. I'm just curious what you think of Danelle Hunter.
Danelle Hunter, okay. He's just a regular guy, okay? He still got to get incorporated into the system. He still got to get incorporated into the system.
Okay.
And all these guys that really had a breakout year, well, we count on that again this coming year, right?
There you go. Called Danelle Hunter just a guy.
Just a regular guy.
Just a regular guy.
He did his Stephen A. there. He's just a guy.
Man, just a regular guy. 16 and a half sacks. He's not a regular guy.
Career high. Like, if you wanted to bring down Hunter, there's other ways to do it. Like, you could talk about his age. But to call him just a guy, I mean, guys have 16 and a half sacks in the NFL. Very, very few. He's been the guy that can get to the quarterback. So, yeah, Mark.
Well, and to your point, like with the Ridley conversation, he was the number one defender on most people's list for free agency.
Certainly as an edge rusher. Maybe Chris Jones, obviously, would have been higher. But,
and he re-signed.
And he re-signed eventually, so he didn't actually reach free agency. But, yeah.
So he was right there at the top of the list on defenders.
Just a regular guy, Danelle Hunter. I hope he's not right. I hope that he doesn't get paid and then comes into the Texas next year and has like 3.5 sacks.
He's going to go coach Ed Reed on us?
He would be hopefully he doesn't do that. Joe George earlier today, we're at Carbach today. The boys were at Carbach. Maybe Joe had a pop or two. He said that Sammy Sosa's numbers aren't good enough to be a Hall of Famer. And he said eliminate the scandal, eliminate all of the stain from like the alleged PED use of Sammy Sosa. He said, if you look at all the numbers and eliminate home runs, Sammy Sosa's numbers are not good enough to be a Hall of Famer. Well, one thing, why are you eliminating the home runs?
Right.
Like eliminating rushing yards from a running back. Like he's eliminating the home runs from a power hitter. You don't eliminate rushing yards from a running back. You don't eliminate strikeouts from a pitcher. Why are you eliminating 609 home runs? How was the play, Mrs. Lincoln? Well, it was fine except for the end. That's what he's doing here with Sammy Sosa. But, so aside from that, if you want to look at the other numbers, well, Sammy Sosa had 2,408 hits, more than Jeff Bagwell, Hall of Famer, 2,314. He also had more RBIs than Jeff Bagwell, 1,667 compared to 1,529 from Bagwell. Went with a local tie because we all know who Jeff Bagwell is. So even if you eliminate the other numbers, they're still better. If you eliminate the home runs, the other numbers, some, are still better than other Hall of Famers that were power guys. But what are you doing eliminating 609 home runs? Bad take.
I mean, he and McGuire resurrected the entire sport of Major League Baseball on that magical ride that they took everybody on to, and that has to factor in. I you can't eliminate home runs, and Sammy Sosa overall is a guy that was a massive part of baseball when he was especially when he put on a Cubs uniform.
I mean,
like, he's eliminating the scandal here too. Like that, we need to the scandal is the reason that he's not there. It's not the numbers.
Right.
Right.
And that's the important part. Like, if you want to make the argument on scandal, that's one thing. But, I mean, saying you're eliminating home runs, like, yeah, that guy is a good he's a good guy other than being a murderer. You can't eliminate the main part. And you mentioned his RBI total. I believe it was over 1,600. 1,500 has kind of been the classic line for RBI. You pass that, you're a Hall of Famer. You're obviously past the home run total as well. So, Yeah, that's a tough argument to
you
make
see,
for Joe.
And I know the guy that drilled him with the question, but they caught him in the airport. He was in Chicago recently.
Yeah.
And he basically, he was willing to bury the hatchet because he and the Cubs have been fighting. And the Cubs say it was because, you know, he took steroids. And they're, again, they're turning a blind eye to all the money that he brought in when he was on the run. And then the reporter, who I know, Luke Kanellis, goes, Sammy, does that mean if you're willing to bury the hatchet and you're willing to admit your wrongs, you're willing to admit you took steroids? And he was like,
did you just
I can't
name drop Luke Kanellis?
Is that a name drop? Do people know who he is?
Yeah, I don't know if that's a big enough
name.
Yeah, I
don't think that's a big
drop.
Name drop. I mean, yeah. In Chicago, you might know him.
We wanted to know that you knew him.
No, I'm just naming the reporter that cornered him. And what?
That you know.
Yeah, I do.
Joe is speaking like a true White Sox fan. I mean, he just has this anti-Cub opinion where he doesn't like Sosa. Because he's a White Sox fan. Stephen A. said that the Virginia Cavaliers should fire Tony Bennett because they lost in the play-in game. And they play. The reason that he said they should fire him is not because he doesn't win enough games. They should fire him because he's boring. What's the objective? When you get hired as a coach, what are you asking your bosses what you need to do? You're saying, well, they're going to say you need to win games, not put butts in the seat and be a 500 team. And I know it wasn't a great year for Virginia. I think it was silly they were in the NCAA tournament over Indiana State. But firing Tony Bennett because their play is boring is outrageous from Stephen A. Smith.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a ridiculous take from a guy that I believe has Texas A&M in his Final Four.
He does.
You look at you know who he is and kind of where he's become a more of a shock jock type guy. I mean, look, Tony. Like I said this the other day when you were out, Jeremy. Tony Bennett's a Wisconsin guy. Tony Bennett has won a national championship, but this is one of those kind of where the rubber meets the road, where you have a hell of a conversation going on right now with Tony Bennett. You better change your system. You better start. You know, because that game set basketball back. Their entire season wasn't good. That game set basketball back 40 years.
I mean,
that was ugly, 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 and that's been his system forever.
And it's won a national title. Like, why would he change the system? He just needs to kind of improve the talent. Like, his system has won a national championship. I don't think the system's the issue. I think it's the personnel.
I actually do.
That's young. How do you win a national title?
I just think the way – but back in a time when I think the offense has evolved even more between the national
title
and now. Right, but 3 years ago and now, they're even more focused on, you know, scoring and points per possession and faster pace of play. And he's always been a slow-down, grinded-out defensive kind of coach. And I just don't know if that works anymore.
Okay. How about this one from Mel Kiper, our resident draft expert?
You have no second-round pick, so some maneuvering to take place there. And if you trade Justin Fields to Atlanta, you could get the 8th pick overall. So you could have 1, 8, and 9 field and be able to recoup a second-round pick by trading down with one of those two picks, either 8 or 9. So a lot of maneuverability for the Bears either way field. But if it's me, I'm taking Caleb Williams number 1 and trading Justin Fields.
He said they could get the 8th pick for Justin Fields. This is a Joe-level take. The 8th pick. For Justin Fields, he actually went for a 6th, unless he plays 51% of the regular season snaps, which it turns into a 4th at best. So Mel Kiper was not wrong, but he was wrong on another like dimension. 4th or a 6th versus the number 8 pick in the NFL draft. Mel Kiper doesn't have a feel for the league.
Not at all. I mean, this is worse than when he had the take of he would quit if what's his name in Carolina from Jimmy Clausen wasn't the starting quarterback for the Panthers within a couple of years. Like, this is even worse because I'm sitting there going, well, what did he mean? Maybe he meant like they flip-flopped the Bears' second first-round pick and the Bears move up to the 8th spot, and then you get Fields as a throw. There's no way you can justify it. There's no way that was even a possibility. That's just a horrible take.
Yeah, because not even when people thought Fields was going to bring back a good return did I ever hear anyone else suggest that he would go for a top 10 pick. I think some people thought maybe you could get a second for him. Maybe in a pipe dream get a late first for him, but no one was ever suggesting a top 10 pick for Justin Fields, who already has proven he's not a great passer.
Yeah, that was out there. That one's wild. This one could be worse. RG3, Robert Griffin, who lives in the Houston area, by the way. Yeah, he does. We go to the same barber. RG3 saying that Caleb Williams should pull an Eli Manning.
Caleb Williams should pull a Eli Manning and demand that the Chicago Bears do not draft him number one overall. After everything that's happened with just Justin Fields, can Caleb Williams really look at that and say, you know what? This is the organization that has my best interest at heart. After the Bears took Justin Fields, the 11th pick in the draft, and turned him into a sixth round pick in the 2025 draft by trading him to the Pittsburgh Steelers? Can Caleb Williams really look at that and say, you know what? Yeah, this organization is going to help get me where I want to go. I don't think it's saying that.
Is it a bad take, Blinkers?
It's a horrible take, Jeremy, because of the fact that if you look at a rookie quarterback, and we look at what happened because we have familiarity with it a year ago, we were questioning how good the receivers were and the weapons were and everything that was going to be in the line that was going to be for C.J. Stroud. And C.J. Stroud went off the planet. But this isn't Mitchell Trubisky. This isn't Justin Fields. This is a situation where before they even draft you, and you're still far enough away from the draft, you have Keenan Allen, you have D.J. Moore, you have Cole Kmet. You went out Swift at running back.
Yep.
You've already started to enhance your offensive line, and I'm sure you'll even address that even further. Like, there might not be a better situation for any rookie quarterback this year coming into the league to have all those weapons at your disposal when you get to a place like Chicago. The only thing he might want to bitch about is the cold weather and the fact that he didn't want to play in a cold weather city. But other than that, I don't know that there could be a better situation for a rookie quarterback to step into.
Yeah, I think this is a case of Robert Griffin not being happy with how Justin Fields was handled in Chicago, and he's letting that kind of go into the take where Caleb Williams should be I don't want to be a Chicago Bear. But I think that the guy to really blame is Justin Fields' poor play. Like, if Justin Fields was so good, why is he going for at best a fourth and at least a sixth? Like, I think he's the one that should have the finger pointed at him. Like, they brought in help for him last year, and they were still not good, and he was still not good.
Yeah, it's weird because the take that Robert Griffin III gives basically tries to take away any and all blame from Justin Fields for the situation.
Yeah, I think Jeremy's right, though. I think
it's just an odd take. Yeah, he maybe, like you said, maybe RG3 is upset, because certainly the first year and even second year with Justin Fields, the Bears didn't surround him with many weapons. So I could see being upset with maybe his treatment that first year. But they gave him DJ Moore. Cole Kmet's a good receiver. They had some decent runners. It wasn't like he was completely without talent around him this last year in Chicago, and he still wasn't a good passer. So it feels like RG3, for some reason, is rushing to take all blame away from Justin Fields.
Brian, I think you put this one on here. The Chris Sims NFL draft rankings, top five receiver prospects. Chris Sims listed his top five. He had tier one, explosive wide receiver. He had number one, Malik Nabers. Number two, Brian Thomas Jr., both LSU guys. In his second tier, he said no bust, NFL ready, Marvin Harrison Jr. And then he had in his third tier, high-end skill sets, Rome Odunze and Roman Wilson. Why do you think this is a bad take here, Brian?
Well, for two reasons. One, I know there's starting to be some push, and I've heard this from Lance, I've heard this from Daniel Jeremiah about putting Malik Nabers ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr. But this is the first I've seen. Maybe you guys have seen it, but this feels like an absolute massive overthinking reach to put Brian Thomas over Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't know what game they watched where Marvin Harrison was doing less than Brian Thomas.
But did Sims just get scorned by the fact that he hasn't worked out, he's not doing interviews, he didn't do pro day?
And Chris Sims is known for having scorching hot take every draft season that just catches everyone off guard. But beyond having Brian Thomas ahead of him, by putting Marvin Harrison Jr. in a tier where that's not labeled as explosive. Like, you watch Marvin Harrison Jr. and you don't think he's explosive? It's weird to rush to put a guy ahead of him where Marvin Harrison outproduced him every step of the way, and then to try to label Marvin Harrison Jr. as not explosive.
And then look where he's got Rome Odunze. That's the other thing to me. He drops him all the way down to the towards the bottom of the list.
Certainly Odunze is explosive. He was a big-time deep passing threat.
I'm going to say that you're rushing to include this in bad takes, though. I don't think we can include this in bad takes yet. Well, I mean, we don't know. Like, what if Chris Sims nails this and we're looking at this in a year and we're saying, he was right. He was right. It's a hot take. I don't think it's a bad take. You might not agree with it. What if he's right? It hasn't played out. We don't know.
I guess. I just don't see what the if I was going to go with you on that, I would have to have seen some basis for this opinion to be founded upon, and I didn't see anything watching Ohio State or LSU play that have told me Brian Thomas better player than Marvin Harrison.
Well, the Chris Sims eye test, which has always been so good, Brian. Oregon leads South Carolina 59-43, 11 minutes left to play in that one. At the half, 10-seed Nevada with a 9-point lead over 7-seed Dayton, 34-25. Those are the two games going on right now. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. If Jalen Green hits stardom, not saying he's there yet, not saying he's going to get there, but if he does it matter how long it took him to hit that stardom? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Carbot Brewing Company. Here's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Still plenty of time to get on over here. Look, we're here till 6. The boys are there till 6. Doesn't close down at 6. Come visit us at Carbot Brewing tonight, tomorrow, this weekend, located 610-290 Interchange in Spring Branch area. You know where it's at. Spring weather that's coming up, perfect time to enjoy the beer garden and outdoor space. All I have to do is go head over to carbockbrewing.com and learn more about their upcoming events. Great food, great drink, great spot to hang out. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. 3426 says, hot take, Justin Fields sucks. I don't think that's that hot of a take. It might depend on who you're talking to. I'm not a big believer in Justin Fields, but I don't think that's a hot take. Do y'all think that's a hot take?
It's not a hot take. I think it's the leading take amongst most people. You know, obviously the Steelers are hoping to resurrect his career, get him a fresh start, take all the pressure off, let him kind of learn a little bit behind Russ and see if there's a possibility of what he can do. I still believe he has ability. I know you and I have had that discussion. I believe that he can be a starting quarterback in this league, but you know, maybe he just needs a year to kind of learn and observe and figure out where he went wrong.
I don't think it's a hot take. I still give Fields a small chance, you know, maybe under Mike Tomlin to figure some things out and probably not reach the promise that the Bears hope for him being the 11th overall pick, but still being a decent NFL starter. But, yeah, that's not a hot take. All the evidence on the field so far has not been good for him as a passer.
Jalen Green. I'm not going to say he's a star yet. I'm not going to say that he's going to eventually hit stardom. I hope he does. Does it matter if he does hit that stardom how long it takes?
I don't think so. I think that for the most part, it's just the fact that you hit on him, that he finally hits. I always go back to the Chauncey Billups example when he was taken in the first round and everybody thought he was supposed to be an instant star, and it took him a couple of stops over multiple years before he found Detroit and found a way to make, you know, carve out a career and win a championship and do all the things that he's done as Mr. Big Shot. I think we do these same kind of debates with the NFL too, because you know did J.J. Watt bloom right away? Did other guys take some more time? We talked about it with Will Anderson. I think as long as Jalen Green is showing you what he's shown you so far and that there's not a complete drop-off between now and the end of the regular season, the fact that you know he's got talent, you know that he's getting better, you know that we wanted to see out of this entire roster this year all the young guys make progress, get better, show you what they could possibly be, that I think that all Rockets fans should be excited about that, because he's not a bust. He's not someone that you're going to let walk away for nothing. He's someone that can actually help your team.
I got into a friendly conversation on Twitter, I think with Chuck, about this. I don't really care a whole lot about Jalen Green's first 2 years. Like, even if Jalen Green hit the stardom already this year, like, maybe you're talking about being in 10th place to the West, whatever. I don't think they were ever going to get there, no matter how good Jalen Green was under Steven Silas, and it's probably better that he didn't get there, because maybe he buys Steven Silas a year or two, which I think would have been bad, because you're in a much better spot now with Ime Udoka. For me, it's as long as he gets to that stardom before he could leave you in free agency. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people have talked about when he's eligible for this, like the max extension and stuff like that, but we haven't talked about how long he's under contract, because you're not forced to give him the max. You're not forced to do that right away. I know once you have a rookie in a rookie contract and he hits that stardom, you pay him as quickly as you can. That doesn't mean you have to do that. He's under contract this year. He's under contract next year, and then he's a restricted free agent after the 2025 season as well. So you could match a salary that he signed and let the NBA dictate what his market is. I don't think it matters at all when he hits his stardom, as long as he hits his stardom while he's still under contract with the Rockets.
You're absolutely right. And the other part of that, too, is because of the fact that the NBA draft has shifted so greatly from having a top five pick, and a lot of people get caught up in this, that, you know, get what gets lost in the wash is a top five pick in the past was probably going to be a franchise type player, an all-star type player, a guy that was going to be with you for a long time and play at a really, really high level. But now, because these guys are coming out at 18, not everybody's going to be LeBron. Not everybody's going to take the league by storm the minute that they lace them up on a hardwood with an NBA logo on it. You've got to mature. You've got to fill out. You've got to grow, and you've got to progress. We always talk about it. Not everybody progresses on the same timetable or the one that all fans would like you to progress on, but as long as you get there, that's the ultimate bottom line.
Yeah, I don't think to me it doesn't matter as long as you still have him. Like, if you were to give up on him, or, you know, it's after his contract expires with the Rockets, whatever, and then he hits his stardom, now we have a problem. Like, that to me is the timeline. While he's under contract with you, until he's no longer under contract with you. If it comes next year, cool. If it comes in 2 years when he's still under contract with you, cool. As long as it comes. To me, that's the most important thing. Dick Willie says, Pac-Man Joel, you called it. He said, just wait until Jalen gets a few games in a row. It's just not a glimmer of light anymore. Where do you stand on that now?
I think that we've seen two different runs similar to this, where, and it doesn't seem that this second run is over yet, to where, to me, it just seems like, and you and I talked about this a little bit, Brian and I talked about it yesterday, that the light finally is staying on. Like, that you saw glimpses to know it's in there. We all said, I was adamant on the fact there is a ton of basketball ability, but can he harness it and stable it and use it the way it's supposed to be used to be the best player he can be in the league? That's where the question marks came, because it was more shoot, and if it makes, then you're happy, and if it's not, then you're not, and it was tough to actually completely buy in, to where now, yes, because of these two runs and because of what I'm seeing, and I already knew what kind of ability he had, I'm becoming more of a believer that he can be a very above average to upper echelon player in this league eventually.
Yeah. Did you see the two controversies with the Rockets, including one of them, including our station?
No.
You didn't?
I did not. I don't think so.
I don't really don't want to talk about it. I don't want to get in trouble.
The the controversial station got a little bit heated.
I can't believe you didn't see. Oh,
there
yeah.
was apparently the country of Turkey is very mad at us.
Oh, I heard Lance talking about it.
Yeah, the country of
because
Turkey.
Because he and Dell?
Someone took a video of something we posted and chopped it to hell to make it seem not very great, I guess is a way to phrase it, or a poor way to phrase it. But, yeah, the country of Turkey not very happy right now.
Yeah, Happy Shingun fans not too pleased with John and Lance. And then did you see the other scandal where Roosh was arguing with Felicia Stone on the Twitter?
Oh, I did hear about that one. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said something along the lines of this organization was trying to trade Jalen Green, and then she like clapped back, said that's not the case, and then he clapped back saying, well, you know where I get my sources, and then everybody just kind of went crazy off of that.
Yeah, and I heard he was not backing down. And first of all, you know, I heard them talking about where are you on if your wife got in the middle of your job stuff. But secondly, like, you know, I think you guys already know that I have a certain opinions about the way Roosh handles his business. He doesn't take L's, and he doesn't go down quietly, even if he's wrong. But, you know, I know that the other thing with Roosh is that he went out there and was talking about the fact that he told Jalen Green what he had to do to become better and things he needed to work on. And I'm like, I don't think that that's a smart move for anybody that's never played in the league.
Did he tell him that in person or on I couldn't quite understand. I knew that happened.
I could not figure out when it happened.
It's a very weird mansplain.
Yeah.
It comes off as maybe the worst mansplain of all time.
I mean,
Trying to tell an NBA player. Yeah. Oh.
They might not listen to me, but I do.
So you're a frequent mansplainer?
I tell general managers and head coaches what they should be doing all the time. All the time.
Yeah, on Twitter, not to their face.
Well, I don't even know.
And usually cloaked in about five layers of sarcasm.
That's true. 713-780-ESPN. HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. John Rahm's Masters Dinner is out. How do we feel about this? There's a new sports television show on Netflix. Do we have any interest in that? And this sports bettor that won big on FanDuel didn't actually win all that big. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.